Welcome to the Business with Beers podcast. And this is the place where we help entrepreneurs expand their business, build their wealth, and generate passive income. I'm your host, Brian Beers, an entrepreneur who's on a mission to inspire growth from everyone around me. Remember that you need to take the actions others won't, and you can live the life that others don't. Please be sure to check out my weekly newsletter that now drops every Thursday. It includes one quote, one tweet, one podcast recommendation, plus some business and investing insight from me. It's short and it's sweet. My goal is to provide you with just a couple gold nuggets to help inspire your growth. Go to brianbeers.com to subscribe. Hello, everyone. I'm excited today to bring you Stephen Sacks. He is an entrepreneur and the author of multiple books, including Reboot Your Business and the Intelligent Investor's Handbook. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thanks very much, Brian. Great to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm excited to talk to you. It sounds like, you know, looking at your resume, you've had kind of quite the career. So can you give us an idea and me some more details? Like, what did your life look like from, I don't know, 18, 20 years old, whatever, up until now? And we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I left school without any real qualifications at about 18. And I went very quickly into the fashion industry. And I spent most of my working life there from about 18 to 50. During that period of time, I mean, I started off driving a van and delivering stuff and picking stuff up. And ultimately, I owned businesses and I bought businesses and sold businesses in fashion, in logistics, in furnishings and bed linen. And then I got, and then I was traveling a lot. I was traveling around the world because we used to make stuff in the Far East, in India, South Asia. And we had markets all over the world, including the United States, all over Europe, and the Far East. So I was on kind of first name terms with some of the guys on customs at Heathrow Airport here in London. And then it just got a bit too much, a bit of a grind. I think that fashion apparel is a kind of younger person's industry. And what I've worked out was that after a while, I was going through the motions, but not really getting the best out of it. So, for example, I was turning up to places. I was spending time on. I do meetings. I do the business side of it, but the social side of it, I kind of like. I wasn't doing so much of that. Disappeared to my room and do emails and stuff. So, in 2016, I decided to leave and exited a business which my daughter runs now. Actually, one of my daughters. I've got four girls. And then I started a new business called Funding Nav. And Funding Nav basically works with entrepreneurs that have more ambition than cash. And it's the kind of access to money and resources which I never really had as I was sort of growing up in business. And that's what I decided to create. And then I've been doing that for the last 6 years. And it's really gone from strength to strength. Now we've got about 25 of us in the business, a lot of partners, and we help businesses access funding.
Hmm. Okay. What are those loans look like? Are they, you know, are you kind of a broker? Or are you making direct loans? Like, give me a high level of the businesses.
Yeah. So it's not all about loans. Basically, we work with business in five different ways. We advise and consult on funding strategies. We offer access to free sources of capital, which includes things like tax credits and grant funding. We help businesses to raise debt, which can often be venture debt, which is very popular nowadays, rather than asset-based lending. We help businesses to sell equity, so sell shares in order to grow that. It could be to angel investors, high net worth, venture capitalists, could be crowdfunding. And also we're heavily involved in mergers and acquisitions. So yeah, it's all of those things. I am also an investor. Sometimes we will extend loans ourselves, but to be honest with you, the majority of the deals we do are kind of like matchmaking. So a lot of it is advisory and broking.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably more scalable too, because you can, you know, you're leveraging other people's capital and just kind of, like you said, helping kind of everybody meet and, you know. And
that's right, Brian.
That's awesome. Good. So then what led you to writing, let's start with the first book, Reboot Your Business. Tell me what's that about and, you know, why'd you write it?
Yeah. So Reboot Your Business was, I spent the first year which is 2017, after I started this business, basically just walking around London. And I guess in common with lots of big cities around the world, there's a lot of networking opportunities. So I was networking breakfast, networking lunch, networking dinners, meeting people. I didn't really know exactly how the business would shape up, but I through a process of talking to people, I kind of worked it out. And then at the end of that year, into 2018, I thought, yeah, it's been great. And the business is expanding, but I kind of need a product. I need a product here. I need something that's more effective than a business card. So I thought, well, a book might be quite good. And I went to a seminar addressed by a guy called Jeffrey Archer. So Jeffrey Archer is actually a famous author. Also, he was a famous politician. Also, he went to prison for perjury. So he was he's got a great backstory. And he got up on stage and he was one of the best speakers that I ever saw. And he was talking about how he wrote books. And he said, look, you know, I'm very regimented about it. I get up early in the morning. I write 3,000 words. Then I go off and do all this other stuff. So I saw him. It must have been about April 2018. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that. So the next day, I set my alarm like an hour earlier than normal. I got up in the morning and I wrote some words. I don't know if I wrote 3,000. And the next day, I did the same thing again. And the next day, I set the alarm. And then other things took my attention because it's actually quite difficult to write every day. So I started looking at the internet and you get involved in these black holes, read the newspaper, went for a walk, whatever. And then gradually there weren't really very many words. And then at the end of that year, my wife took me away on the most boring holiday that I've ever had in my life, which was to the Maldives, actually, which is kind of a place. There's not a huge amount to do there in the Indian Ocean. And it was raining. And so there was literally nothing to do because there's only beaches, right? Yeah, yeah. So I had my laptop with me. It was Christmas time and I just disappeared and I basically banged the book out in about 10 days. So I went there with 6,000 words and came back with 60,000 words and just downloaded it. It was brilliant. It was like therapy. And then it took another 4 or 5 months of editing and working to kind of refine that. And then it was published a few months after that. So that's kind of what happened. It was everything I learned in my life around business, plus specifically everything I kind of gained in the previous year to that in lots of different businesses, because I'm involved in so many different businesses now. And it's written in three sections. The first is, I guess, experiential. It's kind of just telling business through stories. The second bit is more specifically where the money is, specifically things like grant funding. So in the UK and Europe, we've got thousands of grants. I'm sure you have in the United States as well. So that's effectively free money. So where that is, because it's very difficult to find any published place where you can find all that money. So I've got several hundred of them in there. And finally, there's a section where you can make incremental changes on a sort of weekly or monthly basis so that you can get this kind of progressive small percentage increases that overall will give you a big improvement. So yeah, that was the whole book. And then it got reprinted in just after the pandemic because obviously a lot changed. That's the main book. And that's kind of what I've been known for.
So do you give your wife all the credit then for booking that trip?
Yeah, but I wouldn't tell her that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's funny. So then I guess what are some of the biggest, like for you, things that you wish you knew, you know, years ago when you were running your business that you've kind of now since then identified and talk about? What are some of those common things?
I think the biggest thing is all around mindset. And I see that especially now as I mentioned, I'm a father of four daughters. And the girls are, and their peers, you know, they seem to be really impacted by anxiety. And, you know, I think often, you imagine people should be having the time of their lives. And in reality, it may appear on social media, they're having the time of their lives, but often that's not really the case. Things are not that great. And I think honestly that if I could go back and have my time again, I would care less about shit, just get on with it, you know, and live more in the moment. And I think that, I'm still young enough to actually do that, and I'm starting to do it a lot more now. But honestly, I'm so much more relaxed and happier now than I ever used to be, and I think that that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I've been listening to, you know, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F recently, yeah. And that's, you know, that's what it's all about. It's like you only have so much mental energy, and you waste it on this bullshit stuff instead of, like, you know, just not caring, and, you know, don't respond to people's things, don't, you know, get sucked into some of these black holes of negativity, and, you know, focus on what matters.
That's right.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Anything else? So having a good mindset, kind of a cleaner, caring about less things. I mean, strategically.
Yeah, I think strategically, maybe focus more. I think that maybe I was too all over the place. Yeah, sometimes you kind of don't really have a very definite direction. So you try lots and lots of different things in order to try and find a direction. And then you kind of forget why you were trying so many things, and you just get involved in too many things. And you really should be canceling them, and then just trying to bring it down to something to focus on. And I think often in my career, I've lacked focus, and that's been a problem. Yeah. You know, it's difficult enough being an expert in one or two things. You really can't be an expert in too many things.
Yeah, this is something I've been, I've kind of struggled with over the last number of years too. It's a shiny object syndrome, right? You see this thing and you like chase after it. And we think that we're diversifying our income. We think that, you know, it sounds cool to tell people you run all these different businesses, but in reality, it ends up just diluting the focus instead of putting all that energy on that single business that you could grow 2, 3, 4x higher. If instead of like a bunch of, you know, average, mediocre, you know, businesses.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Fields. It's very popular nowadays to talk about side hustle, but, you know, the tail can wag the dog, and you in the end, you do end up getting misdirected sometimes through the side hustle. You know, then you have like 2, 3, 4, 5 side hustles going on, and it's just too much.
Yep. And the income you're making from those, you could probably make a multiple of that income in a single business if you weren't so diluted.
Totally.
Yeah, so then how do you balance that with your current job? So, because your current job, you look at all these companies that all sound cool, raising equity and debt. And I mean, how do you kind of, or what's your position now on that? Do you look at more of an investment and try not to get actively involved? How do you?
Yeah. I mean, I got to say that I started this, I think, because I was in this kind of rat race of, you know, this sort of mouse wheel of, and specifically two big issues I had. One was stock, inventory, and the other, which hangs around your neck like a millstone sometimes. And then the other is staff, people, and ditto. You know, whilst that can be a great asset, it's also can be quite tiring. And I kind of wanted to rid myself of those things. And now I've done that, and I've got a team, but they're largely based overseas. So I've got a big team in South Africa. I've got a team in the Philippines. So, you know, the operational gearing in the business is significantly less than what it was. And yeah, that just gives you kind of fresh air and the ability to kind of think better.
So if you don't mind me asking, this is kind of interesting. I mean, we have a number of, you know, remote employees in the Philippines as well, who do a lot for us. So
yeah.
Can you walk me through what's that structure look like? So it's you and some partners there in the UK.
Yes.
And you're kind of the founders, the leaders, and then, you know, what does the remote side of it look like?
So I've got a kind of VEA, virtual executive assistant, somebody I met in Cape Town when I was there on another holiday, actually.
The better one?
About three, yeah, phenomenal. South Africa's great. Cape Town especially is an amazing place to visit. And she came down from Joburg to meet me, and we got on like a house on fire. So she's kind of really super supportive. We talk like most days. For us in Europe, South Africa's great because the time zone is within 1 or 2 hours, similar to ours, and English first language. And there's a lot of whereas in the UK we've got like virtually full employment, and it's really difficult to recruit quality people, and it's very impacted by inflation. In South Africa, you know, they've still got the opposite issue, and specifically driven by underutilization, positive discrimination, which means that it's quite difficult for some people to get employed at all. Even if they're graduates and really, really bright, they just don't get the job because their face literally doesn't fit. So, you know, finding work for those people, you know, virtually is really rewarding. And now I've got about 6-7 people there working for us, and we're looking really to expand that team. So it's considerably more expensive than the Philippines, but the skill set and what we do there is entirely different.
Okay. Yep. Are they more like the account manager level kind of interface with the businesses?
Yes. Yeah. They actually speak. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's more exactly the kind of the back end helping make the wheels go.
Yes. That's right, Brian.
Okay. Interesting. So back to your book. So the last one, incremental change, you know, that one's interesting to me. That's one in our business. You know, I operate a chain of automotive repair shops is my primary business. We have 29 locations and growing. And, you know, as the company gets bigger, you know, every single, you know, percentage point adds up to a lot of money, you know, on the big scheme of it. And so rather than trying to move mountains, our current philosophy is now let's, you know, if we can get 1% better here, 1% better there, you know, times, you know, the millions that we do that's where our profitability comes from. Right. And so talk to me about how you go about it, you know, over the years. How have you implemented this incremental change throughout your businesses?
Well, yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, if literally you add 1% to your revenue, 1% to your margin, reduce your cost by 1%, you know, take 1% off your inventory. I mean, literally just 1% of everything. And you can do that in the course of a year. And you've got a business of a reasonable size. You know, when that drops to the bottom line, it's phenomenal. Really amazing.
Yeah.
And you just keep pushing that all the time. And now, of course, I mean, depending whether you're a glass half full kind of guy or a glass half empty kind of guy, you know, you might view the current turmoil in the world as a major issue, or you may view it as a major advantage. I mean, for example, here in the UK, I heard earlier that McDonald's have just increased the price of their cheeseburger from 99 pence to £1.19 after 14 years. That product remained the same price for 14 years and suddenly gone up 20%. So, you know, McDonald's have obviously spotted an opportunity to push the envelope there. And I think that all of us need to look at ways that we can, you know, try and build more profitability in our business. Yeah, McDonald's are good guys to follow, I think.
Yep. Yeah, in our business, we look at labor rates and what we charge. And a lot of times guys are, you know, in our business, other, you know, owners, they want to make these small changes, like our labor rate. You know, we were about 140 an hour. You know, we just raised it to 150. I think we're now at 160. But like on average, we sell a little over an hour, you know, per customer or whatever. And so, you know, we're talking a $10 to $15 incremental change to a customer to get the car fixed over the long run. Like it's not that much. It's not like we're doubling the price, right? But some people have this mindset that like, oh, it's like a glass ceiling that they can't cover.
So Brian, you fix automobiles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
not me personally, but
So yeah. I mean, we just started working with a guy that fixes gas boilers. And he's got three elements to his business. The first is he fixes gas boilers. The second is he does annual maintenance of gas boilers. And the third, and by far and away the best part of his business, is he's starting selling service contracts so that people pay a monthly subscription. And it's like insurance. Should the boiler fail or something go wrong, then they'll come around and fix it with it without any additional charge. And he said in the first year, he sold 10 of these, and he was absolutely, he was very worried that these customers would be very, very unprofitable, that they would, they'd be calling him every, you know, the whole time, and he'd be losing a load of money. In reality, he had 10 people paying £20 a month each. Nobody called him once. He just collected all the money. Now, it's evident that the way he's going to grow his business is selling more maintenance contracts on a subscription. And of course, that isn't just more profitable. The value that builds in his business in terms of exit and in terms of, you know, for him personally, you know, once you've got a subscription customer, then you don't need to keep reselling them, right? That just builds. So, you know, for you, you know, maybe selling contracts for people to get their cars fixed.
Yeah, that's something
over a period is maybe the way to go.
We've that idea has crossed our minds. It's thinking of how you execute it. How do people not take advantage of it, right? Especially when it's a monthly subscription, they need a bunch of work and they pay 1 month, but then we'd have to think through that. And it's probably a large numbers game where, you know, yeah, a couple you might get screwed on, but you know, you sell, you know, tens of thousands of these and you do all right. And, you know, we have a big customer base. You know, we got, I don't know, 100,000 cars a year, whatever we fix. Like, it's a lot. So the opportunity could be there if someone could figure it out.
I would suspect the multiple on your business currently might be, I don't know, 2 or 3 times profit. But the multiple, if it was a subscription-based business, could be 10 times. I mean, it'd be, you know, if you ever came to realize the value in your business, you're selling an entirely different animal then, really entirely different.
Interesting. Well, maybe that is worth investigating a little bit more because nobody's doing it, at least not effectively. You know, they try to do it through selling like insurance contracts, basically, aftermarket, the things you see on TV late at night or whatever. But even that's like, I don't know, a lot of those companies try to scam people anyhow, where they don't want to fix things that they thought they were going to get fixed. So,
lease companies sometimes lump it in with it. You can buy leasing with maintenance, right? With tires sometimes. So, you know, but for people that don't lease their cars, I don't know, maybe it's the thing.
Interesting. Cool. And so what, what's next for you on your horizon? How big is, you know, the company? What kind of direction are you going in?
What's next? Well, I'm super busy the whole time. We've got a number of really interesting things that we're working on. For example, today I was speaking to the largest grower of sparkling wine in the UK. And one of the beneficiaries of global warming, as it happens.
Okay.
Because the Champagne region, which is like, if you imagine level with Paris. As things are getting warmer, that weather has kind of moved up to the south of England and it's considerably hotter now in that part of France. So, you know, there's a ton of sparkling wine now coming out of the south of England. And honestly, 20 years ago, that wasn't even a thing. So, you know, that just shows that, industries are being forced to move with the weather. So, you know, that's one example. I'm working with a major fashion company around acquisitions. We're on our second one at the moment, working with a number of businesses that buy and build. We're actually acquiring our own property business currently. So there's a ton of stuff going on, loads and loads of opportunity. And I think and my glass is definitely half full. I'm seeing much more opportunity now than I ever have previously.
Yeah, it's all about the perception. You know, the people that only see negative things are going to see negative. And guys like me and you who see the positive, and we're the ones that are going to be able to take advantage of it.
That's true. We've also launched and this is something that exists in America as well, actually. I don't know if it exists in Philadelphia, but I know that it's very active in Miami. And this is a Mexican concept called Fuck Up Nights.
Okay.
And basically, Fuck Up Nights celebrates failure. So, you know, it's really, everybody wants to talk about success, right? Basically, that's what we're talking about here, right? Yeah. And I'm guessing that's what you talk to most of your interviewees about. But failure is so much more interesting. People are more interested in hearing about it. The lessons you can learn from people that have failed are greater because obviously that's where all the learning is. So what these guys do is they've got like 300 cities around the world where they run this, and they say, we've just acquired the rights to do this in London. You have an evening, you have 3 or 4 people who get up and talk about something that went really badly wrong, that was their fault. And, you know, this is a kind of liberating experience where you can get this kind of thing off your back. And, you know, you're telling an audience who learn from it, and there's probably going to be new opportunity as a result of it too. So, yeah, I'm really excited. We've got our first one in London on the 29th of September. I'm really excited to launch that. And I think it's going to be really interesting opportunity to see how open people are here. And we're a lot less open in the United Kingdom than you are in the United States to talking about stuff like that.
Okay. I have two questions. One, how do you monetize it? Is it a fee to join or?
Honestly, I think it's really tough to monetize. I don't actually expect to make any money out of it. I think that
we'll
charge people an entrance. We chuck a beer in. There'll be a bar, which maybe there'll be a percentage on the bar. I think that, and definitely there's the opportunity to sell this into corporate. So I can imagine, you know, people like Coca-Cola and Google would be interested to have internal events around this, because I think it could be really, really helpful for the organization.
And you moderate it or whatever.
Yeah, so you go in and moderate it and talk about it and help people to accept that. Zuckerberg says, you know, go fast and break stuff, right?
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I think Facebook would kind of celebrate that, you know, the idea that you should go in and don't be afraid to make mistakes. Look, don't make it a second time, but talk about the way you did it the first time. Maybe less people will make that mistake the second time, and let's celebrate that and just move on. And I just think that's such a healthy thing. You know, here in the United Kingdom, if you failed in business, it's very difficult to come back from it. Whereas I know in Silicon Valley, many investors, they won't touch investors. They won't touch entrepreneurs
unless
that
they
haven't
fail.
Failed. They don't want the failure to be on their bill, right?
Yep.
And we're not like that. But I think that honestly, we should be like that. We've got so much to learn. And I honestly believe that one of the reasons why the US economy is the most robust and strongest in the world is because you have a very healthy attitude towards failure.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great view. So what is one of your biggest failures then? That was my second question.
I was begging that, wasn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
My biggest failures are, well, I've had businesses that have gone bust, specifically furnishing business, where we just got ourselves deeper and deeper into the mire. And in the end, there was like no way back. And that was really, really tough.
Because you're buying all this inventory, taking up this debt, and the inventory's not selling like you thought it would. Is that the
Specifically, I'll tell you what happened. Actually, was Brexit. I mean, you're familiar with Brexit, though, right?
Brexit. Oh yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Brexit. There were two impacts of Brexit. This in 2016. One was that the cost of products went through the roof because we were buying stuff in US dollars and we were selling in pounds sterling. Mm. And the value of, rather like now, actually, the dollar was very strong relative to the pound. Now, of course, it's the dollar strong because there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. Yeah. And therefore, people feel very safe with American dollars. Then it was just because we made a huge error and our pound was very weak. And people were nervous. So our cost of, we were selling stuff directly to consumers often. The cost of customer acquisition went through the roof. So whereas previously we were able to buy advertising and monetize customers on the first sale that was profitable, suddenly it became very unprofitable. We needed more cash. And in that particular market, it just wasn't forthcoming. So that was a huge error.
Mm. So what did you learn from that?
Well, what I learned was maybe get out of stock, lose the staff, start funding that. That's what I learned from it. And that's what I did.
There you go. And that's, you know, you're much happier now, right? More relaxed. You don't give a shit about as many things. So
basically, yeah.
There you go. It's good. Any books besides your own that have been impactful you've read recently or over the last year or so that you find yourself recommending to people?
Yeah. Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, one of my favorites. I love that.
It's a good one.
4,000 weeks.
Okay. What's that about?
So that's basically, it's the opposite of time management, So 4,000 weeks is basically your life expectation. That's kind of what you've got on the earth here, which doesn't sound like a huge amount, right?
Yeah.
And it's basically, you know, all of time management is generally all about, yeah, multitasking, fitting more into less, you know, just different, like the Pomodoro technique, you know, let's work for 20 minutes, then stop and then start and do something else. They're all kind of versions of the same thing, which is doing more stuff in less time. Whereas what 4,000 weeks does, it says, oh, hang on a minute, take a step back, just do less stuff. And it comes back again to what we're talking about, the side hustle, multitask, you know, it's about just focus on the really important things and just do those. And the rest of it, don't bother.
Hmm. That's good.
So that was interesting.
Okay. It's like, you know, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, similar premise there, where you just, that's how you work 4 hours. And if you read that book, but you just do
I have less. Read, I have read that book. And that was instrumental in me kind of using VAs overseas, because that's kind of one of the big points in that book. But that is about doing more stuff, I think, also. I mean, to be fair, taking out, you know, trying to earn a living in 4 hours,
yep,
and then spend the rest of your time doing what you want to do, right?
Or you would personally do less, but your team maybe do the same. Like the same amount of things got done just by other people, yeah, through these systems. But anyway, I'll have to check that out. I like it. You know, it's kind of on the trend. So 4,000 weeks.
Yeah.
Cool. So where can people connect with you, learn more about your company, buy your book, whatever you've been up to?
Yeah. So they can have a look on the fundingnav.com website. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can contact me by email, telephone, whatever, which I'm sure, you know, maybe that would be on this
we can
when
link it
goes
up.
Out.
Sure.
Yeah. So any one of those ways.
Awesome.
Always happy to talk.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on and sharing your story. And I got a ton of good notes here, and I think you provided a ton of value. So thank you.
Brian, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Cheers.
That's all we got for this episode with the Business with Beers podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is to rate the show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. Also, make sure to link up with me on your preferred social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find all my links at brianbeers.com. Please just share the podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. And until next time, remember to take the actions others won't to live the life that others don't.